Lulz is back with Pete and Brick. Last week, we spent a good 20 minutes on Christian rock music and jam bands. Who knows what we'll get up today? We will talk a little DFS, maybe some Battle Royale, some sports betting, a little drama, a little gossip. You guys know the drill around here. It's Lulz with Pete and Brick.
He thinks this is a go. Vegas Dave thinks this is a go.
Hot naked girls doing yoga.
What?
Why don't you just win like a man?
Random.org. Type in one for yes, two for no. Let the DFS gods pick for you.
And I'm absolutely begging you not to dupe us. Please don't dupe us.
All right. Brian, you're fresh off a stream over there with Nerdy and Davis, rolling right into Lulz. How are we doing today?
Good, good. I was chilling to some Goose earlier.
I should have checked them out after the show, and I still didn't. I'll put that in my to-do list.
You're right. I got to pop them on. After this, we'll pop on some Goose.
Yeah.
I imagine it's guitar jam band.
Yes. Yes. I believe you. I believe you. People, the comments on the show from last week, you know, sometimes you worry. I think we've done a good enough job of random tangents on this show that people don't expect anything. So you always wonder if you'd be like, come on, guys, you know, talk about something sports related. But people seem to enjoy the Christian rock conversation.
Good. Good. Yeah. Because that's what they're going to get.
That's what they're going to get. That's what we're going to pivot here hard. How is your week three DFS?
Oh, much better. No real shot. A lot of them, but I was profitable in the Millie and a couple other ones.
Yeah.
Nothing really that I had a realistic shot of. It seems like each week I've had like my I get the nut players in the early.
Yeah.
Like I'll look at a lineup. You know how you scroll down and you're like, which one has the most player minutes remaining left?
Yeah.
No, that one has. So you scroll down and you're like, holy cow, I got 260 player minutes left. How is it? And then I would have, you know, like I can't remember who went off in the earlier ones this last week, but I had like three or four of them with a stack left. And it's been like 3 weeks in a row. I've had this. And it was like Justin Herbert stack was 1 week. I think it was Minshew this week was the stack. I can't remember the third one, but it's just like, and I'm like, man, should I try to see if I could put a real team, you know, real stack in this? And I'm like, no, I'm just going to roll with what it has.
Yeah. But are you feeling good about your process? Just got to keep rolling it out there.
Yeah. I'm going to keep rolling it out there. I'm not going to do anything different.
Yeah. Apparently there's a lot of talk in the chat right now about soda here. Oh, because you said, got to grab a Diet Pepsi. That's what started this. Consigliere says this is the most controversial Brick take. Do you want to address your Diet Pepsi?
We just talked about this on Davis's stream.
Okay. Then we don't need, I didn't know that.
No. I mean, it's fine. They want an answer from you. Cause I'm a Diet Pepsi guy and Davis was highly offended.
That does vaguely offend me. I'm a regular Coca-Cola guy if I do have one, which is like once every 3 months. Was the offensive part the diet part or the Pepsi part?
The Pepsi part. If I was going to have a regular sugar drink, I'd probably do Dr. Pepper.
Yes. That was my go-to one. I have this like triggering memory of Diet Cokes growing up as a kid. So like my mom and all of her sisters loved Diet Coke, like my dad, like when they would hang out. And so I would like walk into like the living room with, and my mom has six total brothers and sisters, five of them are sisters, and they would just all have Diet Coke out, and there would be their lipstick around the thing because they all had their bright red lipstick. This is the 90s here, and it just grossed me out. And I think like one time I had like a sip of it, and the combination of the lipstick and the Diet Coke, and I can never do a Diet Coke in my life. It was ruined for me.
It's funny you say that because Davis has a very feminine sensibility. So that must be why he's a Diet Coke guy, because a lot of chicks love Diet Coke. So this is all adding up.
The one time I crave a Coca-Cola is like if I'm hungover and I just want something greasy, like you're having a hamburger or whatever, and like going, you're not feeling like alcohol, obviously, going to a Coca-Cola there, like that really hits.
I told them the pretty much the only time I have one is at the movie theater, Cherry Coke. I got a Cherry Coke popcorn.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good one. You said Dr. Pepper. That was my go-to as a kid. That was my favorite.
Yeah.
But I had I had different, depending on what I was eating or the different places I would go, I would crave a different soda. So like when I went to Taco Bell as a kid, I wanted Mountain Dew.
Yeah, it's marketing. It's all marketing.
Dude, they got you. It's so good.
Yeah, it's so funny. I know exactly what you're saying because I knew what you were going to say before you answered. I remember one day I was living at home. I was like, but I could drive. So I must have been like 17 or something. And I was walking out the door. It was actually a draft. It was either the NFL or NBA draft. And that was back when I was not going to miss a second of that stuff, right?
Yeah.
And I was walking out the door, and my sister was home. My older sister, she goes, "Where are you going? The draft's on." And I go, "I'm going to get Taco Bell because I just saw a Taco Bell ad." And I stopped and put the keys down and went back. I didn't even think about it. I wasn't even hungry. I was just, they had so much advertising during the draft that I just was going to leave and miss the draft.
It is crazy how that worked. And too, like, yeah, at McDonald's was always Coca-Cola for me. Chipotle, weirdly, was always root beer. I always craved the Barry's root beer or the A&W, whatever they had there. So I don't know. I was always like, I wanted to line it up with what I was eating.
I told them during the stream, Barks zero sugar root beer is like almost as good as regular root beer. It's actually pretty good.
And this was like, now there's all these boutique like root beers, right? Because even with the like craft brewery scene exploding, like there was a craft cola scene that has emerged. You go and you can get like these insane, really good root beers and stuff these days.
Yeah, root beer, I would drink a regular one of those. I like cream soda too. I must be like from like the 40s or something.
Did you ever have like as a kid, like one thing that takes me right back to the 90s? I haven't had one of these in legit has to be like 20 plus years, a root beer float.
No, I made one myself because I like this zero sugar so good. I'm like, I can make a root beer float out of this.
Wow, how was it?
It was delicious.
Wow, man. Because that was always like, I feel like they would do it at school. Like you'd have an ice cream party or a root beer float party, or it'd be someone's birthday. This is like mid 90s. And it was like root beer floats were the jam.
Yeah, definitely. Kids love that stuff. Did you get your super chat there? I wanted to kind of.
Yes, I got a, the Aaron says here, Bourdain hangover cures 3 aspirin, a Pepsi and a joint.
I would say the oh my god, why am I forgetting the name of it? Mucinex.
Yeah.
Like something that will like open you up to breathe when you sleep is helpful. I'm not sure how safe that is to be taking when you're not sick and you just for a hangover. But man, when you get over 40, you need all the help you can get.
Yeah, this is when I put in the title of this video, DFS Betting and More. By DFS, we meant drink fucking soda is the acronym that we meant. Yeah, I just like if I'm having liquid calories, I want it to be a beer. But yes, a good Coca-Cola, it has its time and place, or you know, a root beer float.
Right. Yeah, yeah. It's kind of actually that's kind of how I drink now too. It's got to be something specific, like. Somebody's in town, there's an event, you know, sporting event, hanging out with buddies.
Yeah. Well, we will maybe one of these days we do our power rankings of all of our drinks and everything here. But I did want to ask you about how, like, because I know you guys have been doing the Sims for BR stuff. You guys continue to make some updates to the Draft Caddy. I believe it was last week we showcased the ownership projections. You guys just pushed out a new update that dials some of those in.
Yeah, we tweaked it again. We're still working on the bottom end is a little harder of guys, like the guys who aren't drafted a ton.
Yeah.
We did do an update. We'll have another one probably pretty soon, but it's gotta be pretty close, and it updates throughout the week. So like I was tracking Zach Charbonnet during the week and sending Pete updates and stuff. I think he got up to like 78% projected or 80 yeah. something like that. And I don't know if you could see what his actual number was. Can you see like maybe live when you're drafting? I don't know if they do that.
I think they've been releasing some of the data after the slates, but I don't think you can see anything real time.
Okay. Well,
I thought there was some, I've seen some people start to mess around with some of the data on stacking so far. I can pull this up. It was kind of interesting here. Just some trends as far as how people are approaching the BRs relative to last year. So this comes from, let me make sure I get his Twitter handle correct, Scott WDFS Plebe. Scott WDFS Plebeian. There we go. But he was comparing stack percentages from last season in week one, and there weren't any huge shifts here as far as how the field was playing it. The QB unstacked percentage was 35 versus 36%. The QB plus a skinny stack went up a little bit from 51% to 53%. This is just comparing all of last season to week one. And then the double stacks actually went down 13% to 11%. A triple stack stayed at 1%, a quadruple stack at 0%. But I do think that kind of tracks with, you know, I've touted, I think a lot of people have touted, like, you know, it's a little bit harder for the double stacks to get there. It kind of makes sense that the field would be slightly moving away from double stacks relative to what they were maybe doing last year.
I would think you need a few more slates to get double stacks, probably slate dependent. Way more so than skinny stacks. So I would give it a few more weeks in there.
Yeah. And then he did some stuff looking at quarterback stack expectation by stack size and just kind of looking at the week one stack size expectations by percentile. And anecdotally, it has been, it's pinged around the meta, like, the week two meta was, if you would have double stacked Kyler with Trey McBride and Marvin Harrison, you would have won everything. And you didn't even need that to win the big BR because so few people double stacked Kyler. Last weekend, the meta was like the quarterback running back pairings. I won a small tournament with Hurts and Barkley. People were winning some of the big tournaments with Lamar and Henry. So again, it is always going to be slate specific how that scoring shakes out, but it is kind of interesting to see what the field generally gravitates to.
You know, Dan's in chat here. He can give you the equilibrium numbers week by week, I'm sure, for that, which would be helpful. I don't know how helpful some of these numbers are, but instead of comparing last year to week one, you compare it to what an equilibrium strategy would be.
Yeah.
And then you could see, you know, what percentage of lineups should be double stacked theoretically.
Mm-hmm.
And then go from there.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting too, cause you're looking at, cause my intuition would be that double stacks might like increase your caching, or maybe let's say like top 100 percentages, but it might hurt your like top one percentile or like top five finishing expectation, just because you do have to be so perfect in a 70,000 person battle royale, and it's harder to be perfect with a double stack.
Yeah, I know. I really don't know the answer. Like I've gone back and forth in my head. I that's why I'd like to see some numbers thrown into a sim to prove. Yeah. Like I don't know, from DFS, I want to say yeah, you can double stack.
Yes. Well, yeah. And again, like I have just my, like my bro science version of the double stack thing. And that is, I don't mind a double stack if like two of the pieces specifically aren't drafted 100%, like the expensive double stack where it's like one wide receiver is going round one, the quarterback's going round two, and the other wide receiver is going round four, like a classic, you know, I don't know what it'd be like a CJ Stroud, Nico and Diggs, where it's like, I just feel like not only do you need them to hit that super high outcome, but then there's going to be lots of other people in the field who have that, where I like loosen up, you know, if both the wide receivers I'm double stacking aren't getting drafted in a lot of contests, then I start to be way more open to it.
What about like this last week? Goddard, Barkley, like I think that's a fine stack because a tight end can get there with like 11 points and be in the winning lineup. And like, for so sure. Like, let's say he had, you know, four catches for, you know, 50 yards and a touchdown. Well, that's still a touchdown Hurts is going to have, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, look at, cause I was tabbing through this cause I'm going to make my video this week for the Deposit Kingdom. And so I got first place in a small one with Hurts, Barkley and Goddard. And right. Hurts had 10 points, but it didn't matter because it got me on Goddard and Barkley.
Right.
And I was curious looking at the main battle royale and the team who got third here had, or where was it? Was it fifth? It was down here. Let me find this. Sorry. Okay, here we go. This guy ended up getting fourth place with the same core as me, the Hurts, Barkley and Goddard. So he was able to survive 11 points at quarterback because he just nailed every other piece. He had this Malik Neighbors, Amari Cooper correlation.
Yeah.
And that
I was going to say, how did he lose? He has the nuts everywhere.
Well, because he sacrificed 15 points to the Lamar Jackson team and the Juwan Jennings explosion. Juwan had 41.
Can you expand that? I just want to see if there's ownership under there.
It just shows the ADP in their pick number.
Okay.
But to your point, and again, like, it is interesting to untangle this because also we are in a lower scoring meta, right? Where something like this is viable. Like there's only a few monster scores on a slate and finding your way to two of them via a block of three players is maybe more viable than if the league was, you know, as high scoring as it was say last year at times.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, that is kind of an argument against what I was saying, because obviously the Hurts stack cost the guy, whatever, 50 grand, 60 grand.
Yeah.
There's also like, what if Jackson was taken already? I'm not saying maybe he wouldn't have been. Would then a sim go, okay, well, it's not great, but at this point, just take him.
Right. Well, do you want to know the other hilarious thing about this specific lineup? He didn't select Goddard. This little arrow here, had Kittle, and it auto swapped into Goddard. So his intention was to have Hurts and Barkley with no pass catcher, and then got swapped into the nut tight end on the week.
That's pretty lucky. And there's also too, like, let's say this sim was put in that position, but it could pick. Who do you want to replace Kittle? My guess would be, well, given now what we're in this position, you take the correlated tight end piece. I guess
for sure. Yes. Because Goddard, you know, Goddard was I got swapped to Goddard on a few of my BR teams. And it's actually been back-to-back weeks of this where there was like the tight end five or tight end six is ruled out. And the guy that a lot of people got default swapped to ended up being one of the highest scoring tight ends on the slate. So in week two, it was Evan Ingram. And then I had a team get swapped to George Kittle. And George Kittle, who didn't always get drafted for whatever reason, was the smash. And then this week, a lot of the Kittle drafters got swapped to Goddard, who was like tight end seven. So not only were you getting a guy who wasn't 100% drafted, but you got auto swapped to him. But I do think you're right. I think on a Hurts team, I would want a pass catcher. That's why in the team that I hand built, I remember I got sniped on Devontae Smith in this draft. And I had already taken Barkley with Hurts. And I was like, okay, I would have preferred Devonta Smith, but I'll still just tack on the tight end that I already have stacked with my quarterback.
I mean, that all makes sense. I want to comment on this guy's, the last comment's comment.
Yeah.
He brings up a point where that I wanted to talk about. Yeah. I'm a bit behind, but Brian talking about Herbert stacks, they seem to be a one-way ticket to Dust Town. So, like, first of all, that was like 2 weeks ago. Like, we weren't, you know, 100% sure, but kind of like the only no ball take I have like right now is it's more like more DF, no DFS.
Yes.
Just because I played for so long and I really don't have any evidence to back this up. But I think like right now is like a perfect time to take like buy low candidates, like guys who were projected well in best ball, et cetera, and aren't performing. It just seems like right around this time of year is when somebody goes off, wins someone a million, everyone goes, yeah, well, of course, Trevor Lawrence to who was it last
Christian
year?
Kirk.
Christian Kirk or whatever was going to go. Like, eventually they were going to have a good game. We all were taking him in the fourth round or whatever, the eighth round. And it's usually around now through week eight or something.
Yeah.
And Herbert, you know, I mean, with Harbaugh in there and stuff like that. Yeah. But like, we were kind of going through a list of players, and there's some who are like, I think obvious, not by low candidates, like Keenan Allen, maybe, you know, cause the Bears really aren't looking that good. He's hurt, et cetera. There might be some structural reasons why guys aren't getting carries, but there's a decent amount of guys who haven't performed yet. And now a Simbro would say, no, you just plug in the numbers and run the sim and then, you know, and go from there. But I do think, like, I mean, even Caleb Williams, maybe, like, could be one, but I think don't be surprised if that happens in the next couple of weeks. And it might just happen because of randomness anyways, but that's what I think in the next few weeks, I'm going to be trying to bump up a few guys.
Well, that's like probably the whole like push pull with projections right now, right? Where you're incorporating the new information of 3 weeks. But generally, like when you talk to those guys, and I'm sure everyone does it a little different, but like the kind of rolling averages they'll use for like the most signal will be like the previous 4 to 5 weeks. So it's like you're still kind of pulling a little bit from last year's data right now because we don't have the full picture. And so now it's like, what's going to win out? Like the previous like anchored prior, or like this new information is actually telling us what's going to happen. That's why a team like the Saints is so fun, right? Because they like drop 40 in their first two games, look like this completely reinvigorated offense. Then they have a dud. They're extremely run heavy in that game too. And now you're left wondering like, wait, is this like a new identity for this team? Or do they actually want to run the ball a shit ton? It's like, it's hard to know which direction.
That's a good point. And what you said about projections is totally true too. Like they don't know, you know, they don't have this data. Like, of course they have it as well. And I think a big part of it's the spreads, right? Cause all these projections, the good ones anyways, are going to take into Vegas into account.
Yeah.
And you know, do you know more than Vegas? Probably not. So, that's why I said there's like no evidence, but I'm telling you, it's going to happen. I don't know who it is. Here's some names, Pete. You tell me. I'm just going down. Like, I just pulled up an old underdog CSV I had like from a month ago. Amon Ra.
Mm-hmm.
Buy low or no? Would you think he's a buy low guy? Drake London.
Yes. Drake London, I think, is a buy low. I think I might be writing him up for something. I was looking at his stuff today.
Davis disagrees with you. Brandon IU.
Oh, that I'm really writing him up.
Drake London must have a lot of masculine energy around him or something. Ayuk, DJ Moore. Yeah.
Well, no one is going to want to play Ayuk after what happened last week. And yet his usage and utilization was still like really good. It was just Jawan with nuts.
Has Purdy gone off yet?
Purdy? Well, last week, that was his best game with his most depleted weaponry. He had like 27 underdog points last week.
Okay, that's pretty good. Laporta?
Laporta would be a good one. My comp for him has kind of just been like this year's George Kittle, where their offense has so many weapons that the floor is now so low for some of these guys, where he can't consolidate in the way he did last year with Jameson Williams emerging. They have an awesome running game. It's just like more of a musical chairs there.
Did London have two good games? Travis almost won the Millie last week, by the way. But after your comment, now I'm glad you lost. So
let's see. I mean, people have not been jamming Drake London. Yeah, he said he was 6 for 54 in a tutty, 6 for 67 in a tutty. But I guess to your point, Brian, like his ADP on underdog this week is 34.8. Like he's not getting drafted in all of these contests. Like people are a little disappointed on the whole with the Falcons offense. Like people were expecting more with Kirk Cousins this year and everyone just like, Kyle Pitts burns me. Bijan keeps getting usage, but hasn't dropped like a 30 ball, you know, like everyone's just kind of
Travis Etienne.
That. So I think that one's a doubly good one. specifically this
That's
week.
Funny. That was Davis's least favorite one.
I love I'm just going to contra trade Davis. Well, so there's two things. Tank Bigsby is banged up right now. And they also are playing this, have a pretty good matchup here this week. So I just think kind of like from a volume perspective, and he's not getting drafted a lot this week.
Let's see here. I mean, these guys were all like very highly picked in underdogs. This one, see, this is like a not good one, right? Mark Andrews, from my understanding, is because of the likely. He's just not getting the playing time.
Yeah, I think there's something else going on there with recovering from surgery. You had the car crash. Like, I mean, you don't have a guy who's that involved run six routes was what he ran last week. I feel like that's one you need to see the usage uptick before you chase it.
Keenan Allen, I don't think there either.
I actually like Keenan this week.
You do? Okay.
Yeah. Maybe I like all the Bears wide receivers. I think they're all really good BR plays. Nice matchup, not getting drafted. I mean, Keenan week one before he got hurt, I think he had what, 11 targets. I think he's actually a really good one to go back to this week.
I'm falling for my own trap is like, cause their offensive line so bad, but it's like part of this is like, everyone knows these things. You kind of just need the aberration game. Where they stink in this area, but then they go off, they get lucky, something happens because you're trying to get lucky. So that's a good point. How about White as another one, because Irving probably now not a little banged up. Worthy. How about Worthy?
See, Worthy's a tough one where
of course Davis likes him.
Oh, of course Davis is just bag defending. At least he's now out of that territory of getting regularly drafted, right? Like, he's kind of bottomed out this week because he's at wide receiver 34, ADP of 35.8. This is definitely the cheapest he's been, you know, since like week two and week three. He was a lot more expensive. So now at least I don't mind taking the flyer on him, but his usage is just pretty low. Where it's like, it really is hard, I think, in the Battle Royale specifically, because I think, I don't even know what his salary is on DraftKings. Someone can tell me, but it's like you are passing on like the Keenan Allens and the Drake Londons who are going to get like 8+ targets to take Xavier Worthy and just hope that he turns one of his like 4 touches into a touchdown. And I'd be way more willing to chase that with 9 spots on DK than I am with just 6, where you can get low ownership and targets. I think it's just probably too thin in the 6 mans.
But generally speaking, he's definitely an underperformed candidate who could be a buy low guy, generally speaking, I would say.
Yeah.
What about Christian Watson?
That one just feels so – Christian Watson is like Xavier Worthy if he had a backup quarterback that wasn't Patrick Mahomes. Like, that's kind of where we're at with Christian Watson right now. If Jordan Love's plays this week, I think you can put him on the GPP menu.
Okay. Brian Thomas?
Man. That offense just seems so broken. But if I were to go to a Jags wide receiver, I do think it would be Brian Thomas.
JSN, did he have a good week yet?
He had a monster week two, and then just a
hope. Yeah, leave him alone then. That doesn't count. Let's see here.
Brian just tossed out a name, and I give my snap take.
I've been saying there should be a good start to this show. Someone should do a start shit. Yeah, although I guess Davis does now too. He kind of.
It sounds like Davis and I should do a start shit show because we would just argue about every single one.
That'd be good content.
Yeah.
Zamir White.
Man, too soon. No, I went to Zamir White last week. He was one of the gems I put in my Deposit Kingdom video. And he's losing goal line work to Alexander Mattison. And so now he's like, he's completely game script dependent. You basically need the Raiders to be up 14 points for Zamir White to hit.
I don't know. I think that's about good enough.
Start shit. That actually would be a good name.
Start or shit.
Start him or shit him.
The most underrated is, of course, Diet Pepsi.
Caffeine. Wow. Are you on the payroll for Big Pepsi?
If they want to sponsor Lulz, they're more than welcome.
I know. We have never had an official sponsor for Lulz. There was one that, like, the first year I did like some stuff with Run the Sims, I told Justin that we would put the branding up on here, but we've never had a presenting sponsor. I don't even know what would be our ideal sponsor. It probably would be something not like fantasy affiliated. We would need an outside of fantasy sponsor.
Yeah, why not? I think the problem is we've had many sponsorship offers.
Yes.
For like $10 for a lot, 18 live reads in the middle of the show. Like, yeah, no, we're not doing that.
But it just like, it doesn't even work too. Like, even with, say, okay, a sim product, right? You know, and then it's like, okay, what are we going to do? Like, have 10 minutes a week that takes away from our Christian rock and soda conversation to run the Sims on a site?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not organic. Just like an ad at the end of the show or beginning of the show is pretty much the only thing that.
Yeah, but then those are pretty much useless, right? Like, it has to be organic, integrated to actually work. I am trying to like legit think in my head, if we could have the perfect sponsor, what brand would it be?
Diet Pepsi, probably caffeine free, would be number one. Sparks root beer, zero sugar.
I've wanted to have a coffee sponsorship for my Monday morning basketball bracket, because I do the coffee pour. Like, there's an actual, you know, it's already part of the show.
That's a good idea. For us, God. Yeah. I think it's just those, just like the ads that play on our podcast at the beginning. It's like, that's the only,
yes,
just random people who just want the mass marketing out there.
That would be funny for us to have.
Smoking.
But it's like neither of us smoke, but we agree to just have a cigarette dangling from our lips.
If they pay me enough, I'll smoke on stream. I don't care.
Yeah. Oh man. That would be funny. That's the thing. What if maybe Brian, like, you have you got the hot tub. I'm trying to think, maybe if there is something where you're out in your hot tub, something like that. Could be good. Fish gloves.
Yeah. Manscaped. They, both of those actually work.
Manscaped has awful, like, they've hit me up many times, and their whole thing is, I think I mentioned this before, a lot of these advertisers, they want you to free roll them, where they say, hey, hawk this product for a 3-month sample. We won't pay you any base rate, anything. And then we'll see how you do. We'll give you like your 20% cut of sales. Mm-hmm. And then if we think you're performing well, we can talk about a different thing. So they just get free rolled of like, you shill their product, and then they could just rug pull it on you and be like, actually, we don't want to advertise with you after you promoted it heavily to your audience for 3 months without any like upfront compensation for that, which is just like, those deals are just
that's insane. I don't even like the promo code deals in general. I know you guys all do them. You kind of have to, but I was thinking, like, what, do they work that out where they give you a larger cut than you normally would? Cause there has to be 80% of the people who see it through you don't use your code or higher, I would guess. And so that sucks, because then, you know, you drove all this traffic to that site, but you're only getting 20% of what you rightfully should have.
Yeah.
And you have to like trust them, and who knows, somebody types in the code wrong or something.
Yeah. It's definitely, you know, fortunately now, like, a lot of sites that I work with have really good like dashboards, as far as being able to see tracks, like, it'll show the amount of people who like click the link to use the code, like actually bought it versus just clicked it, went to the cart, and then did, you know, like, they give you a pretty good breakdown of analytics. And then you can be like, oh, I pushed this out on Twitter and I can see that this got 63 clicks. Like, it's nice to be able to like validate and check that, to your point, as opposed to it just being a black box. And they're like, here's how you did. And you're like, I sure hope you're not lying to me.
That's true. Do you get money depending? I'm assuming it depends. Like for they okay, we saw that you get all these click throughs. They didn't use the promo code Pete, but you got a whole bunch of click throughs. You get money for that too. And they eventually deposited. They just didn't use your code.
Yeah. So I don't know exactly that if they're just clicking. Like here's a good example for, and this is a real one. So this week, because I do the partnership with One Week Season in JM, and I do my Friday shows. And this week they're doing anyone who uses code Pete Free can get a free weekly pass just for this week. You just create a free account, you get the free weekly pass. The way it works is if someone then decides to buy the subscription for the rest of the year because they're like, hey, I really like that. I want to up in week five going forward. If they use the Pete Free for the free pass, then I will get my affiliate chunk for what they do purchase going forward. So that way it's like tracked. It's not just like, oh, I'm helping them get on the site. And then if they up, then it's like, well, they did that on their own. They clicked it. It's like, so they, you have to have some base level mechanism for tracking that. I think everyone handles it differently.
Yeah. I could see if they track all clicks and then whatever gets deposited, you get your cut. That would be pretty sweet.
To your point, I think there's some stuff that, you know, like the thing with a lot of marketing, right, is people hear about something over and over and over again, and then they finally capitulate. You're like, all right, everybody's playing on Underdog. All right, I've heard enough of it. And then it's like, maybe you don't even know who was the tipping point, where it's like a lot of people probably contributed to that person eventually signing up. And then it was just like, whose promo code was in the right place at the right time, even though it took a village of influencers to get on their radar.
Yeah, definitely. I was just going to say that, Johnny. I was going to say, what about yoga mats? Yoga man sponsor.
I wouldn't mind that.
I think the whole like best ball system, you know, owes you guys for building it up. Like I think someone was complaining on our stream about I can't remember what they were complaining about. I think just that we were using Sims or something, but like. It's like, you know, like we're the reason best ball is popular is because like people like us popularized it. Like it wasn't just going to organically happen and get big. I'm not taking any credit myself, but like anyone who like, you know, you guys for sure, who's like getting the hype behind it is why it's at where it is. Like, because I don't think maybe I've seen one, but I don't know if I've seen a TV ad on Underdog.
They do there's the TV ads because like Josh and Settlement have done it. They now have some big ones. Belichick,
I'm sure they do them. But like with DraftKings, you couldn't like leave move without seeing a DraftKings ad back then. I was crazy.
For sure. Which was it was just like a completely different approach, I guess, to how to build and how to grow. And it is interesting, right? Because you think about you know, what do you think would have been more effective? And clearly the advertising blitz for FanDuel and DraftKings was effective.
Yeah.
But that's still like when you think about just going on to blast off a parlay or bet a money line versus go build a salary cap lineup. That's like a bigger ask of a rando seeing an ad like on at a bar or whatever, where I actually wonder if their advertising blitz had they already had, you know, sportsbook legalization or whatever, or DraftKings had their licenses, they probably would have smashed even harder than they did. Because I'm just thinking, like, that's kind of a hard, sticky thing to be like, hey, come build a DraftKings lineup. You're not going to know what you're doing. You're probably going to take a bath, even in the early versions of DFS. And then keep coming back, where at least with, like, sports betting, it's like, all right, you come blast a parlay or whatever. Like, I don't know. It seems like they were almost ahead of their time with that blitz.
Yeah, so like you're saying like if it was sports betting instead of DFS, they would have just killed it in sports betting.
Killed.
Yeah. I imagine they're not doing that now because they could still do it now. Although media landscape has changed, even though that was 2015 or whatever. Like a lot of people are not even watching TV at all. But I think the reason they won't do that is they don't think they want the eyeballs on them.
Right.
With sports betting and the kind of stigma and everything.
Right. That the kind of the UEJA carve out was way more of a shield from anything going wrong than it is with sports betting where there's still so much in flux.
Yeah. And what are you going to do? Like people, especially back then, like people are like, oh, it's addictive. It's like fantasy football. It's like fantasy football, dude. Calm down. Just let them play fantasy football. Like, no one, you're not going to get the public outcry over fantasy football. Now it's a little different since people are more familiar with DFS and stuff. But back then, like, they couldn't get in like regulatory, super big regulatory trouble until Ethan Gate, anyways. You know, just based on stigma of fantasy football, no one cares. But sports betting, if you do that ad blitz now with sports betting, you're going to get inquiries. And then if things go sour, they'll be like, well, you did that right after this ad blitz is when the suicides went up. And so you're directly responsible. You know, you could get in big trouble.
Yeah. No, you're right. And then it creates just such a weird tightrope walk, right? Because wrestling for market share is still huge right now. And so how do you, you know, like Underdog right now, they are doing just tons of promo blitzes as far as like the boost and all of that. Yeah.
FanDuel was downloaded more in the app store than DraftKings, FanDuel Sportsbook.
I saw that the rankings of those, and I think both Prize Picks and Underdog were like top 10 too, but FanDuel over DraftKings.
That's crazy.
Is that because that's the international, right? Is what's largely driving that?
I guess a good point. I didn't look into it one iota, but I was just shocked. I'm like, wow, really? Good for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The more people you get on that list, the better for all of us.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, but on the best ball stuff, I mean, Jordan's saying too that they caught seasonal fantasy football pros at its peak. I still think even like redraft stuff is even bigger now than it was then. Just like the entire space, I think has really grown.
I would agree with that. Yeah. I think, in the 90s and early 2000s, like you were still a dork if you played fantasy football. Like, I mean, I know we're all dorks still, but like it was really pretty, really not that popular, even with like bros who love sports, you know?
Yeah.
I would say even being like a super fan was not that popular back then in the 90s. So like that kind of changed where then everyone became okay with being like a super fan. And then I don't know what year, but yeah, probably around in the 2010s or whatever, there was a lot more fantasy players than there were before.
Yeah.
But now everyone and their mother plays.
And I just think it's like so many things with, you know, pop culture, music, TV, books, movies, everything is way more niche, right? Like there used to be more of a monoculture around fantasy football. If you were playing fantasy football, you were in a 10-person or 12-person work league with friends and family. It was on either ESPN or Yahoo. You read Matthew Berry's love-hate column, and you maybe listened to a Yahoo or CBS podcast. And that was how like 95% of people interacted and consumed fantasy sports. And now we have just niches within niches. Like the best ball thing's a monster of its own. The dynasty stuff's a monster of its own. Like obviously the DFS world. It's just like, and all of them, I think, are siphoning off some of the like the overall pool of just fantasy football home league bros. It's like some of them got really into dynasty. Some of them got really into best ball. Because I've even noticed it too with like people overreacting to their week two advance rates. It's like these are newbies who are interacting with this game for the first time that aren't necessarily aware of how this all works.
I think you're right. I don't see the super niche ones in the dynasty. But when I was working at the Capitol, I remember there was like, you know, a bunch of lobbyists and stuff. And they're like, oh, we can't do this. We have to change this law because of this group. And I'm like, who? And they're like, it's because of the season long football lobbyist. This is like, who knows, 2015 or 16 or something. So they were there.
Yeah. Well, and it's been tough, right? Because it's harder for like the season long stuff and the best ball and the dynasty to like make significant money, because even the stuff that, you know, has an entry fee, it's tied up for 18 weeks or whatever.
I like the Underdog low payout structure for this reason, because it seems like I mean, it doesn't seem like it almost certainly happens that a lot of bros get a decent amount of their money back. That wouldn't happen in the super winner take all top heavy DK drafts. And so you get a lot more player base and less turnover. Even though you know, EV wise, you probably would rather have it a little more top heavy and just try to get lucky. But, I like that fact that it's not, you have to put your money in there and 7 months later, maybe you get some back. You know, yeah. It's with season long / BBMs. So, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, you see the 300K battle royale and it's like 30K to first. It's like, eh, because I'm used to 300K, 100K to first.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you see like you were just showing yours, right? You got like $600 back or something on a 660.
I had one team that finished like 35th or something.
But you almost broke even, right? And with rake back, you probably did.
I made money in the flagship last week. I had 50 entries, so 250.
Oh, okay.
I got like 600 back or whatever.
Oh yeah, then you made money. I assumed you maxed it out.
I haven't had I've been maxing out basically every single 20 max or lower. So every single entry, 3 max, 5 max, that's where I've been kind of putting my time. I think there will be some more weeks as like my process gets a little more streamlined that I'll do a little more. But like also to your point too, of thinking of like contest selection. So like the team I had that won that victory formation contest with like 500, I looked to see where that would have finished in the main battle royale. And it would have been 235th place for $35. So like it is a huge difference. A 60,000 person contest versus 600.
Oh yeah. Yeah. If you want to like get some money back, you don't want to play those.
Yeah.
You know, these milli makers. So like I'm popping this up now. So Travis did, took, I think, fifth. Yeah. How much do you think he got? So he took fifth in the milli maker.
This is the flagship.
This is the flagship. So a million to first.
I mean, was it 10,000?
It's not that brutal.
Okay. But
pretty close. 35,000.
35,000. How many points off of the milli?
Less than six.
Wow. Insane swing. What was the team?
Point away from third.
Actually, I can pull it up because I had a couple teams in the milli maker this past week. I didn't notice that.
But like there's this like double what's the word? It's a double edged sword. I don't know. Yeah, double edged sword. Where if you play the milli maker and do well, like let's say you know get more than your buy in, you did well. But then the problem is you were probably close enough. If you do show a profit, you were probably close enough that if like a, you know, one touchdown goes a different way, you could have won. But in these lower flatter payout structures, you actually don't even have to get that crazy.
Right. Right. So here's the team. I had not seen this one. So this was a Dak Prescott to Ferguson skinny stack, Henry at 9%, JT, at 4%. I mean, holy cow, this is a milli maker lineup for sure. Go double San Francisco with no Purdy, Ayuk and Jennings. So you get the 49 bomb. You get Jennings at 7.3%, Kyron Williams at 2.8%. Wow. What a lineup. If he just would have known how to pick a defense, we could have had him on the show.
Ayuk probably – did any of the guys have Ayuk in front of them? Can you check really quick those four teams?
There has to be no way they had Ayuk. There's a Jennings.
Nope.
Jennings. You had to have Jennings. Jennings.
Then nope. They're definitely not number one. So yeah. if Ayuk just has a decent game.
If literally just one of the Ayuk or Jennings touchdowns go to Ayuk.
He doesn't even need that. He just needs a couple catches for, you know, 40 yards.
Wow. I love this. You know what? Petty's always in the chat wanting us to talk about drama. He says Lulz has gotten away from its bread and butter. this is what you get, us talking about how close you were to winning $1 million and how agonizing it must have been for you, Petty Theft. Well, this is a sick lineup.
Maybe we could talk about drama. Is Fantasy Cruncher back online, people? I haven't even checked. I'm going to check right now. Does anyone know? What's your guess, Pete, unless you know?
I don't know. I would say no. I feel like I would have maybe have seen people talking about it.
This is the only drama in DFS right now that I know of. Looks like a no. Allegedly, don't sue us. Because it's not popping up for me.
It's not either. I'm getting the spinning wheel of death, clicking it from.
Man, I wonder what the hell happened there.
Yeah, so the one update since we last talked was he did a post on September 17th. He apologized. He said it will return. I don't have an ETA yet. I will detail as much as I can once we are back online. And then he said, I'm sorry for my actions over the years. Also assured people that no charges would be processed now or at any time we've been offline. And then says, I believe it's the hard times that make us grow as humans. I will be a better person. FC will be a better company. And then for the audio listeners, a blue heart emoji.
I told you to tell him to make an offer to buy it.
Ooh.
He's his number one. He's his number one customer, right?
That'd be a good, that would be a big acquisition for you guys.
Yeah. The problem with tech companies though, is you need the tech guy. Like to work there for a year or two to make sure you get it all working and locked in and stuff like that. But I was just joking, like for him to buy it for himself. And then just use it.
That's funny. Do you know what there would probably be a funny, like say before it went down, like imagine there was a scenario where, let's just say this is complete hypothetical, obviously say like 80% of the DFS community used a single optimizer and like right before like week three, like Yuta then goes to that one and like buys it from them and shuts it down. So like all of his opposition is like scrambling and doesn't have the one tool that they used. And then you just get to run out like a few slates before everyone migrates somewhere else. Like you just basically just corner the market for a couple of weeks in the MME.
I mean, speaking of the market changing, this had to affect it. This had to drive a bunch of signups elsewhere.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, I had Galen on. He's behind the scenes at the Solver. He didn't give me any concrete numbers, but I did ask him, and he said things have been going well for them this year. I'm sure they saw a boost.
If he was hacked, wouldn't that be like years of jail time for someone to ruin a business like that?
I believe so.
I mean, honestly, I have no idea. Cause I mean, you're not going to get like someone who hacks you like probably doesn't have millions of dollars available for, you know, in a civil suit.
Yeah.
To compensate. So, jail time, I guess.
The thing that's interesting though, is like, again, if you were a customer, I don't know if that message really changes anything for you. Right. Because like, there's been a lot of slates, there's more slates coming. Assuming you're an MME player, like you've likely gone somewhere else by now.
That's my point. I mean, the guy, if he got hacked, I have no idea what happened, but if he did get hacked, like you ruined his business. So,
right. And then at that point, it's how much better is your product that people would come back even after subscribing to a new product. Yeah. And it also puts people in a tough decision, right? Where it's like, again, you can't, real world doesn't work like this, but if it was like, oh, in a month we will be back up, and it's like, I will get a 1 month subscription to a different optimizer and then I will come back, it's like a lot of those people were probably like, I'll just buy the season long version, I get a deal by paying for the whole season versus a month. Like people have to make their decisions.
So the backstory, Morris, is Fantasy Cruncher is like the biggest optimizer in the DFS space. They didn't upgrade to Sims, and so a lot of people probably switched over to Sims from there, but they were still probably had plenty of subs, and no one really knows what happened as far as I can tell. It seemed like he had some cryptic tweets that made it seem like he got hacked, the ones before Pete was just showing, threatening lawsuits and jail time. Then the site went down. He went AWOL, just didn't respond to people for a week or two or something like that. And then finally came out and said an apology, said no one will be charged and that they'll be back. That was like at least a week ago. So they're just completely down. And if it was hacked, I'm assuming they just like completely got control of it somehow or just deleted all of his stuff. And maybe he didn't have it saved somewhere else or something. I have no idea how he couldn't rectify it after a month now or whatever it's been, especially during football season. Yeah. So who knows what happened, but that's a guess.
Yep. So we will keep tabs on that. Anything else, Brian, going on over at the Endgame Syndicate these days?
No, I did a video on like beginner R use. Like if people don't know how to use R or no idea how to code or anything like that, it's not as intimidating as you might think. So I did like a super beginner video.
Nice.
On there this week. And we'll be pumping more out. We got Draft Caddy update. So ownership's on there now. I'm going to do one more tweak this week on there. But it's got to be pretty close.
And Dan's
working on the background on adding some sort of like sim or something for BRs. Or it might be like equilibrium percentages. Like what should they be owned at? So you could see like, you know, the 100% guys are easy, but you could see at Barclays, all these guys are 100% projected to be owned.
Yeah. I just, before we went on, I added the new one here. So in my overlay, I have the spread, the total, and then their projected draft ownership. And you can kind of see how it tracks with obviously the lower in ADP you go, the lower the ownership's not quite exactly, but pretty smooth in that regard.
Yeah, there'll be guys who are picked more, even though their ADP shows, you know, higher. What was I going to say? Oh, you could also throw your exposures on there too if you wanted to. That still works from BBMs.
I do that late in the week. Like right now, I've only done like 10 or 15 drafts, so I don't really need to see my exposures. But come Sunday morning, I like adding that in to check things out.
To answer Zach's question, we weren't showcasing a new tool. We were just – Dan's still coding it, so we're like testing it out and trying new things and stuff like that.
What do you make of – so like I pulled up the tight ends and obviously there's a ton of uncertainty at tight end this week. Doesn't seem like Trey McBride's going to play with the concussion. Who knows about George Kittle? But you go Goddard, Kelce, Bowers, all close to 100%. And then a huge drop off to the tight end four at 60%. Normally my like intuitive sense would have been the tight end four is higher than that. Do you think because it's just such a wasteland, people are just kind of bouncing around down here?
Yeah, it has to be. I think these will be tweaked slightly and they'll be updating as the week goes on. We get more information and they'll become more accurate. So don't take these numbers as like Sunday gospel, right? Like it won't be these numbers on Sunday, but you're probably right. It's just they're mixing and matching. So like, if you think about it, Pete, right, there's only generally six, maybe 6.5, 6.75 tight ends taken per draft.
Yes. No, so most people don't want it. Sometimes the auto bros will accidentally take two tight ends, but most manual drafters have zero interest in doubling up at tight end. Right.
I think we did one double tight end when we were drafting today. The Sims told us to, but.
Oh, really?
How many, can you scroll up? How many 100s are there? Two?
Essentially three. If you count Bowers at 90.
So yeah. So like that makes perfect sense, doesn't it? So like six guys get picked and then they vacillate between these four on this as the sixth guy.
Well, and it makes sense based on the ADP, right? The three that are 100 are all top 20 picks. Once you're getting down to pick 31, you're already in kind of people scrolling to, you know, round out their team for correlation, for stacks, et cetera. It's not like, you know, if Pitts had an ADP of 25, I bet this would be a lot closer to 100.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, you have to do this is a really interesting tier section, actually, because I'm not sure what the answer would be, because if those guys were a little bit higher, I would say the answer is definitely just scroll down, because now you're getting in that 10-15% range for like,
and I think that's kind of what the field is doing, right? Where they're saying these guys are a clear top three, right, and then there really isn't difference. Normally there's not a difference between like tight end 6 and tight end 10. And this week it's so bad that there's not a difference between like tight end 4 and tight end 10.
Right. Yeah. And that they're mixing and matching is not a good sign, because that's pretty smart. That's exactly what you should do right there. And that, but be like 50-50, you know, slightly changes. So like if Cole Kmet was like 20% owned or something, that would be like, oh great, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
But that's pretty, they have like a perfect mixed strategy right there. And then you got the scroll down candidates.
Right. And it looks like the cutoff here. So you go from tight end 7 to tight end 8 and below, right? So you go from like 57, 42, 53 down to 15, 9, 4, 6. So that's the big jump after tight end 7, where you're actually getting the pretty big ownership cutoff.
Right. Right. And I've not looked at the projections, but I imagine they're probably pretty close right there.
Who?
Just those kind of four guys right there that are projected about. No, the Zach Ertz.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Conklin, yeah. Schultz. Yeah. I imagine they're pretty close.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So you could kind of mix and match there too.
For sure.
But like, but my point being, like, I'm not sure with the distribution of this ownership that it's worth it to go below those four 50% owned guys.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where
I'm leaning. Like when I would typically look at this, my snap take would be to mix in the top three, try to have an underweight position on 4, 5, 6, and 7, and then mix and match 8 through 12.
Okay. I was saying mix and match 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
Cause they're still only half in half the field.
So one thing that's so tricky about 5 is McBride, right? And obviously, if he doesn't play, you're going to get a swap. But because you can't do individual swaps, you can't really balance your swap stuff. So you basically, if you're going hard on McBride, you have to be okay with whoever's like the tight end. Like say Kittle ends up being out too, and it's like you're going to end up with a ton of Zach Ertz because he's going to be like the default auto swap. And then it's like, do I end up wanting to have like 35% Zach Ertz?
That's another question we probably could answer too with Sims, is that Q-tag, the Q-tag list that you make on Sundays. So like Zach Ertz, let's say Zach Ertz is the obvious number one there. Okay, now that he's out, we know Kittle's in 56% of the drafts, right? So if he's in 56% of the drafts, that means Zach Ertz is now in 56% plus his 15 drafted. So he's in like 75%. Is it worth it to keep Zach Ertz your number one tight end replacement at a 75% ownership clip?
Right. And then that's where it even goes harder, right? Because you're like, okay, I want to, let's say I like Gesicki, you know, at 10%. Probably just a better play if you're talking, hey, Ertz at whatever versus Gesicki, or even going lower. But then it's like, do I want to go that far down to a dust ball as my pivot? Because you can manually adjust your ranks, and I could make it Tyler Conklin and everyone. I don't get McBride. But that's why it's so tricky, is you don't necessarily want 100% of the pivot.
But it seems just like so obvious that you go to Conklin or whoever there over the guy who's going to be auto picked and auto filled in, like, you know what I mean? Cause it's not like here we have human beings making decisions and diversifying, and sometimes they pick Ertz, sometimes they don't. But when he's number one on the list, when Kittle gets ruled out, they're just going to leave him there. They're not going to do anything. And he's just going to get picked so much. That just going down to the next guy who's like 0.75 point less projected is just such an obvious play.
Yeah. It's a unique week. Because obviously, like, if you get Kittle playing, like getting him even at this price, even with 50% ownership, would be a really good deal. Because if you knew he was playing, his ADP would be around pick 20 here next to Brock Bowers.
Right.
So that's what makes it a little trickier. But yeah, the tight end position, it's so gross that it actually becomes like one of the most interesting game theory angles to these.
What's the RB? Can you go to RB really quick?
Yeah.
So we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, basically 7, 8, almost 8 guys at 100%. Yeah. Almost.
After Aaron Jones, you go to Brian Robinson. Brian Robinson's going to get a decent amount of steam. He'll kind of be like this week, Charbonnet. Eckler's gotten ruled out. It's the highest total game of the week. Brian's going to move up. And then down here, you're in kind of more flyer territory with Jacobs and below.
And how many RBs get picked per draft, would you say? Like 10.5?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would say like 1-2-2-1 builds have been much more popular. So let's assume that like half go 1-2-2-1. That would mean, yeah, between like 9 and 10.
And you got 8 almost auto drafted. Yeah. So it makes sense. These numbers all make sense, actually.
Yeah. I like when I thought this week, when I re-updated it again, just my, like, you know, having done some drafts, scanning these, they looked very dialed in. And again, like, for these numbers to be valuable, they don't have to be perfect. They just need to be directionally accurate. If they're within 5 to 10 percentage points, like, you have all the information you need.
Yeah. But I was actually talking about the players, the people picking, like, it seems to be pretty sharp. There's not like big dramatic, you know, obvious ADP or ownership issues. I mean, you'd have to look at this a little more, but I want to say if there's going to be 9 to 10 RBs picked per draft and there's 8 100 percenters, that seems like too high. But then you look at the 8 players and they're all pretty good.
Yes. Yeah.
It's kind of hard to go instead of Aaron Jones, you want Brian Robinson Jr.?
I think that one's fine. I think in the ownership kind of reflects that, because this is
okay. Zach Moss then.
Right. Then it starts to, and again, like, it's not saying these guys aren't good plays. Like, I think Zach Moss is a good play, but he's a much thinner play than the top 8 in the ownership.
Right.
But yeah, I think this is a super valuable tool, and even just, again, having the number next to it, and you can quickly kind of see in your drafted players, like, oh, I have 500% drafted guys. Maybe I don't take Brian Robinson as my final pick on this draft. Maybe, yeah, I just go right down and I go to one of these guys, ETN or Najee, who's, you know, a fraction of it.
And Pete, you mentioned, I don't know if the people want this too, we can do team total instead of total and spread.
Yeah.
Is that useful? Save space? Or, because I think sometimes so, people don't like team total.
It's so funny, because, like, I guess when I look at, I like knowing the total, but I guess I just don't care about the spread that much with these guys, where it's like, I don't know, you think about the spread and it's, I guess the trap is like, you're trying to like guess game flow for like specific players. But it's like, when you click a guy, you're basically hoping for the smash outcome, you know, regardless, where it's like, I don't really care. I actually am more curious, like, how much their team is projected to score. Whereas like, if I see a monster total, but it's because San Francisco is projected to score 30 and the opponent is projected to score 19, you know, it's like, I don't want to necessarily like quickly think like, oh, this is a much better play than it is because of the total, if it's weighted toward the other team. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. Yeah. I kind of agree with that too. I just think like people, a lot of times they talk in spreads and totals. So but that's like a simple math thing, right? Total divided by change, or go ahead.
I have to get going real quick, but I will happily show this here. Let me quickly.
Well, do you have the latest version, Larry David, young Larry David?
Young Larry David. So once it's here, let me move us to the side here so you can actually see this. So up here, like in my, I'm doing this on Chrome. You can do it on Mozilla too, but I have you can't see it now, but when I click on the Draft Caddy extension up here, it gives me a settings pop out. And when I hit settings, all I do is go over to the best ball columns. And you can see here, I have my 3 spread, total and BR ownership projection. So those are my three there. And then if you go back and refresh, you'll see those. You can also select other things. Like you could hit your, I just clicked here, exposures, if I wanted exposures. But right now I like having the ownership projection. And then if you do want your exposures, you go to drafts completed, main slate. You can see here, I've only done four drafts. Let me get this comment off so you can see this. You expand this and you hit grab exposures. Or sorry, no, I have to click exposure here first. You go into here so you see your exposures. You hit grab exposures and now you see this auto exposures captured. Yeah. And now
you pick the GPP you want to display.
Correct. Or you can grab them all, right?
Or grab them all.
Yeah. So that's the simplest way there. But yeah, if you're not finding the new one, so like you can, if you go to your, manage extensions. So like I can see right here. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have DraftKaddy 2.22 here. And if you go to, brick75.com and you go to the DraftKaddy, you can see the latest version 2.22 here.
Mozilla auto does everything.
Yes.
But people don't like Mozilla. They want the Chrome.
I'm a Chrome bro. I did Mozilla a little bit this summer because the leg up sidekick was Mozilla only. So I would have, for my slow drafts, I would have both the leg up extension and the draft caddy. And so I ventured over to Mozilla for that. All right, I got to run. We were talking about BR stuff. I have lots of Battle Royale content that comes out tomorrow. I do Often on the Clock with the Badge Bros at 2:30. We run through the slate. And then I have a video that drops on the Deposit Kingdom YouTube channel like later Friday afternoons, where I'll have my kind of Battle Royale gems and use these ownership projections to kind of flag some of the players that I think are going unnecessarily overlooked. Anything else for you, Brian?
Nope. That's it.
Awesome. Appreciate you guys. Sorry for so much ball talk. We'll get back to Christian rock music next time. If you ever have show topics, things you'd like us to discuss or show guest ideas, feel free to drop them in the Discord. We got the Lulz channel in the Deposit Kingdom Discord. Have a great week. I will also be live tonight for the Shipcast 8:15. If you guys want to come hang out with us for the Giants and Cowboys game. Otherwise, we'll see you next Thursday.
He thinks this is a go. Vegas Dave thinks this is a go.
Hot naked girls doing yoga.
What?
Why don't you just win like a man?
Random.org. Type in one for yes, two for no, and let the DFS gods pick for you.
And I'm absolutely begging you not to dupe us. Please don't dupe us.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.